Talk Breakfast. The kickoff with Steve Hothersall.
Radio City Talk.
Brand new book landed on my desk maybe a week or so ago and looked and thought, wow, the European game, the secrets of European football success. The fascinating element of this book is the author, Daniel Fieldsend, has been right across Europe visiting some of the biggest clubs, but not all the biggest clubs, some small ones as well, finding out the secrets of their success. So if we're talking from Ajax to Juventus, the history of Inter Milan, Bayern Munich, Benfica, Athletic Bilbao, and much, much more as well, whether it be scouting, finance, politics, everything that goes into it to make a football club successful. He's a UEFA qualified coach, and he's also been a scout working for Liverpool Football Club as well. Morning to you, Daniel. Nice to see you. Quite a build-up there, looking through that. Just give us a little bit of history about yourself. Your love of football, your love of this city. Where's it all stem from?
Well, it's being from Liverpool. You know, obviously, if you come from this city, you are overwhelmed with football. So I came to do a degree in football studies at Liverpool Hope University. Mine was the only degree. They started it in 2010, ended 2013. It went down to Southampton.
Degree in football studies?
Yeah.
How does that sort of build itself?
It's mostly about the socio-economic background of football and globalisation and commercialisation, things, how the game's evolved. But from that, I came to start doing coaching, got my badges, did a little bit of work at Liverpool FC. But all the while, I was still writing as well in the background. And I had this passion for writing going on with the passion for football. And it came together and I was able to, you know, write this book.
Have you long been fascinated about how football clubs have emerged, how football clubs have retained dominance, how the inner workings happen within some of the biggest institutions? Has that been something that's, you know, been important to you for a long time?
Yeah, definitely. I think for all fans as well, we're interested to know how clubs work. They can often be shadowy institutions where we only find out bits of information. So what I wanted to do with this book is, when I went away, pull back the curtain a little bit and show kind of what do managers do day to day, or what do scouts do, what does the role entail of these different staff members in football. So I met with every club I went to, I tried to meet somebody different. So I had youth coaches, I had an agent, I had an owner, you know, and just tried to compare what they do and try and shed a little bit of light on what these staff members do.
It's not the easiest thing to get into football clubs, is it, and get a little bit of an insight behind the scenes?
It's not. It really isn't. But that's what took me aback, was how, say
transparent. Did you find them, most of them?
Oh yeah. In comparison to in Britain, where some fans don't even know where the facilities are, where the teams train, they're like local institutions, the community assets. I went to a club called Rayo in Madrid, and literally the doors are open. There's kids playing in the car park, and you know the first team are doing the training just there. Same in Ajax, you walk in Milan, and I'm surprised because Milan's like a huge global name. Just walked in, you know, and the teams are training. There's people walking the dog. Bayern Munich's the same. There's Pep Guardiola taking training, and literally families just cutting through the training facilities.
There is that weird difference between, I think it's between countries, isn't it? In terms of just even training, the ability to see players behind the scenes. If you go to Spain, you can actually watch them, can't you? You can see teams going through their paces. Try and get your head over the wall at Melwood and get a glimpse of Liverpool or see Everton behind closed doors at Finch Farm. You know, and a lot of the English clubs are very secretive, much more so. Where does that sort of culture stem from?
I think, personally, from going to places like Portugal and Holland, they are so open and they are so sharing, and they like to pass around information. And they become these educational centres for development, especially in youth football. And they'll invite coaches from all around the world to come and watch them. And yeah, okay, so you go to Ajax and coaches will leech their methods and try and implement them at their own clubs. But they don't mind, they'll continue to reinvent. Whereas, like you say, in Britain, fans don't know where the clubs are, the facilities are. And when Pep Guardiola, when he got to Bayern Munich, he was shocked how open it was. He tried to put up a big fence that people couldn't see. The fans couldn't go and watch because there is that kind of paranoia towards the methods. So I think personally it will change. It won't be as open as it is. Although the sessions that they deliver, it's not it's not the big secret tactics for the weekend. You know, the more like fitness and recuperation sessions. But it's nice that they're open, and it's nice that they're allowing fans to engage more than, you know, the ritual Saturday afternoon experience that we have in England.
Right, we'll talk about various aspects of the book over the next half an hour. Give us all the teams you went to. Can you reel them off? he opens the book just so he doesn't miss one out. Go on, what were your teams?
Right, so I went into...
In order?
Yeah, we're going through the map of Europe
right,
now.
Go on.
I went into Paris, CPSG.
Right.
I went into Lyon. All the while, I was getting the train to each destination. Athletic Bilbao, who are a fantastic, amazing club. Porto, down to Lisbon to see Benfica and Sporting Lisbon. Across to Madrid, see Rayo Vallecano. I met with coaches at Barcelona. I went and met an agent in Marseille. The scouting team in Juventus. The academy manager, Filippo Galli, in Milan. I met with the scouting team again in Red Bull Salzburg. I met the owner of Budapest Honved. Went to Austria Vienna as well. And then to see how German was football. The German football is done. I went to Dortmund. Then Ajax and went Feyenoord as well.
The kickoff on Radio City Talk. Your one stop for Merseyside sport.
This is Radio City Talk.
Daniel's been all over Europe visiting some of the biggest clubs to establish and look at how they created their legacies. Now, if you look at some of the contents of your book, Daniel, you go really deep, don't you, into how these clubs have created sort of legacies, how they've sort of built their empires, if you like. Do you want to split this up into different countries? Does it feel that way in your head as you went from the different countries, from France to Spain to Italy? Were you experiencing a different footballing culture and legacy being created?
Yeah, to be honest, and that's part of the reason I wanted to go around anyway, is in the Premier League, it's the global league, we've got all the finances, and with that money comes the different ideas from abroad. So it's an amalgamation, it's quite a melting pot of different styles. I wanted to know if these other clubs, if FC Porto, if Ajax, if they retained their cultural uniqueness or was the whole of European football this amalgamation of sameness now? And I did honestly find that they were retaining their unique mentalities, their unique ways of working. But one thing, interestingly, that has plagued every club in Western society is the demise of street football and having these young kids, the Zidanes, coming through who are playing on the street because society is getting wealthier. You know, in Portugal, they're in school for longer. So what's interesting is how clubs are actually trying to facilitate and bring back street football in an academy environment.
And does that work? Does it feel the same? Does it generate the same sort of player of the future?
It's interesting because, as you know, as listeners will know, when you're a kid, you're playing with guys who are older or younger, you know, and a little mini democracy forms within the children, who the leaders are, and also playing against these older players. You develop as a player, you develop in terms of your maturity, and they actually are trying to do that. So, say, for example, at Feyenoord, they'll just throw out 100 footballs. They'll have whatever age groups there. Go out and play. Do what you want. And they'll give them an hour before training to do that. And then they'll get them in. They'll do the sessions and the technical work. But they'll try and incorporate free football like that. Another club have built a football park, you know, because the obstacles like benches and seesaws and swings, when you're playing with that, it creates that spatial awareness that Zidane was the perfect 360 player. But we're in danger of creating kind of robotic footballers now, you know, who can't think and act for themselves.
The perfect footballer. That's what they're trying to create all the time, isn't it? Mm. Let's have a look at Ajax. So you went to Holland, you mentioned Feyenoord then. Ajax, you've written a chapter on this, chapter 19, understanding Ajax, because Ajax has got this incredible reputation, hasn't it, for breeding young, talented footballers. It's a reputation that stretches back many, many decades. So who did you meet when you went there?
I met a youth coach called Peter van der Veen. He's moved on now. He's with the Dutch national team.
Mm. What sort of window into the world of Ajax did he give you?
He showed me everything. I'm sitting there in the cafeteria, and it was incredible. I wish I'd have took an autograph book because walks past, there is Van der Sar with loads of guys. There's Bergkamp walks back. Japstam was still there then. He was talking to a load of young guys. But that's what they want. They want to reinforce this Ajax mentality by having players who came through the ranks at the club and who know the club. And they're teaching the younger guys all about what it means to be Ajax. Because obviously the issue they have is with the climate of Dutch football, the best players leave at 18, gone. Mm. Well, even younger. Some guys go to academies 16, 15. So they're trying to reinforce that identity of being the best youth developers. And what they do now, one of the things that's in the book, they have this mentoring system. So Peter van der Veen said he's responsible for 10 kids in a variety of different age groups. And what he does, he goes and sees the kids at school. He'll go to their homes. He'll play video games with them. And what that then does, say you're a seven-year-old child, you go to Ajax, you form these bonds, and it creates this familial, warm atmosphere, which they're hoping makes it more difficult for the players to want to leave Ajax, that they won't get that elsewhere, because Peter van der Veen will be a member of the family. He'll have tea with them for some of these kids. And it's just going that extra mile.
So they've taken it to the emotional level.
Yeah. And they've had to do that.
You won't want to leave. You want to be part of the Ajax family long term. And of course, that's a problem that Dutch football suffers from. Create great players, lose great players to the better leagues within the world. As have Ajax and Feyenoord had to redevelop, redefine themselves over the years, change the way they do things, or do they stick to a very rigid sort of structure? Is it a history that they just still continue with?
They constantly have to reinvent themselves year upon year. And what they're doing now as a nation, so after they failed to qualify for the last European Championships, all of the big academies came together, PSV, Ajax, Feyenoord, and they decided that what the best players needed was better competition. So they're going to play each other in a stronger league. They play each other four times a year. And Feyenoord forever playing, PSV playing, Ajax playing, FC 20. But the mentalities of these clubs are different. So Ajax, if you imagine, they believe in small-sided games for the younger players, little 3v3s, 4v4s. Feyenoord believe in playing in 11-a-side, bigger pitches, and focusing more on developing players for the actual game in that sense, whereas Ajax developed the individual. But despite these different philosophies and ways of working, they've had to come together. But when you read the book, it's interesting how polar opposite Ajax and Feyenoord actually are. But they've had to come together for the Dutch nation.
Your guide to Merseyside sport. The Kickoff.
Radio City Talk.
Right, great insight into the European game and a brand new book of that title written by Daniel Fieldsend, The Secrets of European Football Success. He's been around some of the biggest clubs in Europe to analyse what they're doing, look at their past and try and assess their futures. Let's get on to Borussia Dortmund. You just pointed out one of the chapters you've written, Knights of the Yellow Wall. You plan to go to Borussia Dortmund, and in some sort of strange quirk of fate, what happened at the same time, Daniel?
Yeah, so I'd planned and I started contacting clubs about 18 months earlier. And I'd planned the route through Europe based upon the replies received 3 months earlier. I'd set off, and when I get there, obviously Liverpool's Europa League campaign was progressing and progressing. And the very day I was destined to be there, the whole of Liverpool was there as well.
Wow.
It was fantastic. Got into the game, got a ticket, and we just had, honestly, the most amazing time there.
Right, so you got to see the game. You got to see a whole load of Scousers come to Germany as well. And what sort of behind-the-scenes access did you get at Dortmund? Or who did you meet there that you got a better insight into what Borussia Dortmund's all about?
That chapter's mostly about the entire region. So if you think of Northwest football and the catchment area, it's Liverpool, it's Man United, Everton, that's their region. It's Schalke, it's Dortmund, it's Leverkusen. And it's how the DFB, the German FA there, how they are quite omnipresent in that they look over every single team, every Bundesliga club, and they all have these DFB centres that they send players to, and they all kind of play the same style. So when these young guys, they're selected not from the local clubs to play for the national team, they're selected from DFB centres. So it's like Liverpool and Everton, they all send local lads to a Merseyside centre. and they all play the same style of football there. And then that same style of football will be the same in Manchester, in Birmingham. So when they come up to play for the national team, it's seamless. Whereas a lot of clubs in England, they'll have different identities in terms of how they want to develop youngsters. So, for example, a Burnley could create a different player to a Blackburn. Whereas by the time they progress to the national team in Germany, it's all aligned. So Sane, you know, the guy at Man City, he played for loads of different clubs at youth level, but his dad is the best mate with the manager, Joachim Lau. So he was naturally going to play for them anyway. He goes in, he scores in his debut. It's absolutely seamless transition all the way through the ages, which is something that we kind of don't have here in England.
Feels comfortable. It's a path that's laid out for you, isn't it?
Yeah.
You see why the German national team is so successful.
Yeah.
Coming back to Dortmund, and you're right here, and it's quite interestingly, you say an appreciation of German football has blossomed in Britain due to the quintessential Britishness of their game.
Yeah. It's the fandom aspect there. That all we want to do is go stand quite harmlessly with our mates, have a few drinks, sing songs, wave banners. But obviously...
And Dortmund do that better than anyone, do they, over there?
Dortmund, it's every club's like that. You could go and watch Hanover and there will be that, which is guys go out there en masse to go and sample the German football because it takes us back to our, what, for want of a better word, primitive football experience. You know, that communal spirit that's kind of taken away from English football fandom.
Yeah, you've also put... the token club of British affection, Dortmund, are more attractive to fans than any other side in Germany because of the colours, the fervent commitment of supporters, the attractive style of play, the beer. They're just cool, by definition. I think that's fair enough, isn't it? Right, let's get on to another chapter. It's about Cristiano Ronaldo, creating Cristiano. It's something that every club would love to do. Now, Sporting Lisbon, of course, was the initial destination for him. What did you uncover about the roots, the start for Cristiano, that the club in which indeed he was born?
So Cristiano Ronaldo has gotten as far as he has because of his mental fortitude. But if you look at the kind of players that come from Sporting Lisbon, there's Nani, there's Quaresma, there's Samau. These are great attacking wingers. They all kind of create these same styles of player. And what they do there at academy level, it's all about the one versus one. It's all about beating your man. Can you break the lines? Can you attack? Can you dribble? What skill moves can you do? And every skill that they've got, so say it's a Rabona, which is what David Dunn famously couldn't do. The Rabona they call after Quaresma. Can you do a Quaresma? Can you do a Ronaldo? And it reinforces this attacking mentality from the players there. And Sporting Lisbon, incredibly, when Portugal won the European Championships, 10 of the 14 players who featured in that final all came through the academy there at Sporting. So they are like the Ajax of Portugal, shall we say.
There aren't many Cristiano Ronaldos that come out of Portugal, though, are they? It's not really a revered league as the same way as perhaps it was a few decades ago.
Again, no, the players have to leave. The money isn't there in Portugal. So you're right in saying that not everybody who comes through is of that Ronaldo mould. But if you look historically, you go further back, there was Figo. You know, you go back further again. There's always been players of this attacking instinct. It must be the sun. We have these mud-soaked pitches and we create more Tony Adams and Martin Keown's than we do Gascoigne's, elegant players like that. So I think there's no barriers to participation there. That they're out, they're trying skills, they're taking on teammates, which is not really easy to do in grassroots English football on the surfaces we play on.
No, that's something that John Aldridge has brought up on the Radio City Legends a few times, and he's talked about Portugal in particular. And he said how when you go over there, the facilities available for youngsters to play on are breeding brilliant players of the future. And he says he comes back here and sometimes it infuriates him when he looks around, not just Merseyside, but other parts of the country, and they don't have... anything that's sort of equivalent that's going to help youngsters progress at the same rate.
Yeah, but thankfully for us, the FA have started putting money into it. They're going to redevelop some of the facilities in Liverpool, which it really does need it. There's courts upon courts across Europe where the guys just play. Even in Iceland, there's just so many football courts, all weather, you know, multi-sport facilities, which are free, which access to them in the UK, it's private, you have to pay for them, which kind of ostracises a certain class of footballers that used to dominate the national team.
Right, Barcelona. And you've started talking about the, you've called it an empire's palette, and you've started talking about the link with Johan Cruyff and perhaps the connection and how maybe initially fans were a little bit worried about the connection between Cruyff and Barcelona. Barcelona's got this whole mystique that goes around it.
Yeah. Initially, when that style of football came to be implemented at Barcelona, they weren't receptive to it. So a lot of hysteria now in England with John Stones, he takes maybe one touch too many in the box and tries to play out, and fans are on his back. That was exactly the same reaction in Barcelona in the 1980s. But over time, they've seen that by playing this style of football, that the success that has been reaped from it, and especially in the long-term strategy that's been in place as Xavi's came to come through there and Iniesta's come through there, and they've built upon that, that once success has been developed, fans now want to see the ball get retained. They don't want to see it hit long.
No, it has to be a style, doesn't it, that they're familiar with at Barcelona?
Yeah.
Who did you speak to when you went there?
I spoke with the former academy manager there. I spoke with former youth coaches at La Masia, and they're talking about how there is a science behind everything the same, but the simplicity of how they deliver it to youngsters.
If it is simple, though, why can other countries not follow, or other clubs not follow, the methodology of Barcelona? Why are all clubs not playing at the level, or indeed, why do they not put on the same sort of football as Barcelona?
That's honestly a huge question. I wish I knew. I'd be a rich man. I can say that.
But when they were talking to you, were they saying it's a very straightforward philosophy we've got here, or were they saying it's a deeper philosophy that they follow?
It's deep. It is very deep. And unfortunately, they're going to use it because every player signed in who's replacing an academy graduate is diluting that, the effectiveness of that. They call it modelo de juego, the way of playing. It's getting reduced in quality. But they fought through that in the 80s to get that cultural appreciation of that style of play, which would take a long time to do here. There are clubs trying to do it, but if you've got, for example, your centre-back split and you try and play out from the goalkeeper and you play into a centre-back, but they haven't got the technical skills to do it, it breaks down from the first phase. Whereas they're developed there from a young age. Everyone's a striker. There's no positions. But as they gradually come to get to play further back, when they get the defenders like Piqué, who was a centre-mid originally, and Puyol, them guys have got the technical skills. It begins there, which we haven't got that yet, but it will come.
Did you leave Barcelona feeling sort of uplifted by what they told you about how this empire was created?
Yeah, to be honest, I left every club and felt uplifted after being there, because there were some honestly long and hungry days when I was away, nearly 4 months in total I was away, and the only time when I was really truly happy was when I was at these clubs. You know, for example, when I was in Milan, someone had hacked my account in Marseille, had taken every penny out of my bank account. And I had to go that day to Milan. And obviously, feeling a little bit down in the dumps. But when I get there, I met with Filippo Galli, who's this great guy. He's a massive Liverpool fan, incidentally. And, you know, it just lifted my spirits tenfold. I got the money back in the end.
You got home at the end of the day. Yeah. Also in Italy, Juventus. Now, the secrets of scouting is one of your chapters. How Juventus dominate Italy. And they've certainly managed to do that for many years now. Obviously, Champions League finalists this year. Gonzalo Higuain leading their attack. But they've been a club that has managed to be at the forefront of Italian football for quite a few years. What have Juventus done that others would seek to copy?
So Juventus is a national institution, the biggest club in Italy. And the guy in charge there, he says, I treat Juventus' money as if it was my own. So instead of throwing money out and gambling on certain players, as a lot of elite clubs have to do, they're the club with the finance in Italy. They can afford to spend it where they so wish. You know, no one's going to compete with Juventus if they want to spend 40 million. But they're looking at the person, the individual who they're purchasing. they knew full well the kind of personality that Buffon was when they spent so much money, or Nedved before. They knew that these guys would go on to form the backroom for years. Nedved is one of the sporting directors there now, and they're doing this for everybody. So even though they spent $7 million on Carlos Tevez, he twice won the Serie A Player of the Year while he was there. They won two league titles with him there. But they knew full well that his valuation was so low because of his personality, because people were saying he's a bit of a bad egg. So they go, they send guys, they watch him train, they see what he's like in training. His desire was through the roof. And again with Vidal, they signed Arturo Vidal. And one of the quotes that the director said there was that anyone who wants to end a day's shift training and then goes home and rides horses is exactly the kind of guy we need for this Juventus, because his energy, his desire was there. And they kind of caught on to the evolution in Italian football before everybody else. They've made it a more technical sport that we see now. Obviously, Italy is revered for being tactically superior, but this technical progress has come from Juventus, and they've identified the change earlier than anybody else and signed the players to match that.
There's so much in this book. You sort of feel if you handed it to someone at an English club, they might go, oh, there's something there that might help us here. Different countries offering different methodologies and different reasonings. I suppose there's no one right cake, is there? It's a mixture of all this. Is that what you've sort of come to the conclusion of?
Yeah, it's exactly what suits the environment. So another club, for example, Athletic Bilbao, who are an amazing club. What they do is they only have players who are born or have ties to a localised Basque region. So, for example, it's Liverpool 11 and all Scouts 11. They can only do that because of the environment that's in place there, because they facilitate a Basque identity in the youngsters. They teach them about the oppressed history of the region. Obviously, we couldn't do that here because we're not an oppressed region. So they've got that and they utilise it and they look towards their local environment and put that through in their club. Same if you go to Feyenoord in Rotterdam. They train every player outside. They want them to be gritty and hard like local Rotterdammers. If the city wasn't a hard place, they couldn't do that. You know, because obviously if they went to Amsterdam, which is a more tolerant, middle-class place, the parents wouldn't accept that. But because the parents in Rotterdam do, they can create players like that. So every club looks towards their inward mentality and inward environment and creates this identity. It's not all transferable, but there are some identities and ways of playing and doing things that English clubs here could look at and go, I like that.
Daniel, fabulous book. It's called The European Game, Secrets of the European Football's Success. I suppose you could do one with South America now, couldn't you?
Well, we'll see.
Yeah, maybe head down, visit some of Brazil's finest. Argentina. I tell you what, different cultures out there. You'd have a right party for 4 months,
I'd
wouldn't you?
I'd never come back.
If you want to get your hands on this book, The European Game, Secrets of European Football's Success, is available now through all good retailers, isn't it? You can get it. I'm just looking at the back there. Arenasportbooks.co.uk. I'm sure that the major stock is...
Is it? Amazon, yeah.
The Kickoff with Steve Hothersall on Radio City Talk.